Good morning. I'm Sharon Crane, alcoholic. It sure is nice to be here. Thank you, Bob, putting this on another year. I had permission to take one meeting off, but I was having such fun. I'm getting off. Having such a wonderful time. And thank you to Kim and Kevin and everybody else who I love in this room. There's so many people in here. I absolutely know their hearts. I know their lives. I respect. You're the kind of people I'd like to hang out with, the ones that aren't, you know, they're not like sitting there in a big book, reading their big book in the, you know, in their bathroom all alone and then, you know, going out into the world trying to be useful. We're bonding together, remembering like we're the survivors of the shipwreck and how lucky we are. And, you know, you're the doers. You're the action people, the ones that I trudge the road with. And you don't, you know, just follow the glimmer of your own little candle. You know, it's a bigger picture for us. And I'm really grateful to be around a lot of people with a lot of time. And there are some newer people here, too, I've met. So I want to welcome you and hope you had a wonderful weekend and just soak it up. And if you're like me, it was like, you know, kind of like what my dog hears, wah, 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 wah. When I'm talking to her, giving her commands, she hears wah, 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 wah. But when I was new, that's what I heard, you know. And now I am so full that I have no choice but to let it flow out. So Alcoholics Anonymous has changed me in every single way. I like that Clancy called this book, you know, a recipe. He talks about it a lot, how if you don't cook the food, you'll starve to death. I like to believe, I was in Campfire Girls when I was a little girl, so I like to believe that it's a guide for me. I know my friend Sandy talks about the big book being the treasure map. It's not the treasure, but it's the treasure map. And if you follow its instructions, you will find the treasure where you will have an awakening as a result of the steps. So it's been great. I wrote down a few things that the other speakers had said. Because, you know, Charlie lobbed it up, and when I was in my sobriety, I played softball, sober softball. And my coach, Vince Yeo, God bless him, used to make us all sit in batting order. He was, you know, quite the little tyrant at 7 a.m. breakfast, you know, where we could hardly look at our food, let alone eat, and we had to sit in batting order, and we had to be suited up, and you know, it was very structured, but we had a terrific team and a lot of fun. Sober softball was a lot of fun. And I was called Base Hit Barker. That was my name before Crane. So he always put me on first. I was always a leadoff hitter because no matter what, I would get on base. I don't care if I had to knock into you and have the ball roll out or, you know, just run like heck to get there, and you know. But I got on base. Okay, base hit Barker, get on there. So I'm hoping to hit a base hit today because Charlie lobbed it up. But you know, he talked about the skybox view. I love that. But and my head goes, but we got to remember to go down and sit with the guys in the stadium. You know, we got to remember to go down and sit and look at a few other ones that are there going, where's the other view? You know. Get the beer and the popcorn and the hot dogs and the mustard all over you. We got to go down and find them and bring them up and show them, look, at this is the new view. And that excites me. I'm not afraid to get my hands dirty working with somebody. I'm not afraid to, you know, as you know, Larry said, you know, make the coffee, cookie girl, whatever. I love being cookie girl. It gave me a lot of power. I remember I was mad at Clint once, because he yelled at me, because I think I spilled coffee on him or something, but I thought he was not being a very spiritual old-timer, so I was cookie girl at Sunday Night Ohio Street, and Clint's favorite cookie, the Fig Newtons, they were just out at the store for about a month until I forgave him. So commitments are powerful, since lack of power is our dilemma. But I like to. I also liken to going out and finding newcomers, like fly fishing. And I have a couple of fly fishing friends. I mean, they just spend a ton of money on gear. I don't know what they do, but they always come back empty-handed because it's catch and release. But we're much like the fly fishermen. And you know, Gary talked about it last night. We're flat. We're flat in Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't even remember the last time I got a 12-step call from our central office. I got an insomniac, and they gave my home number to her. That was interesting. Finally, about the third night at 2 a.m., I said, "You want to go to a meeting? We got to get you to a meeting." She said, "No, I'm an insomniac. I just want to talk." And I was like, "Okay, lose my number, please." But I found them through work. I found them from being out into the world, being an example, trying to have a conscious contact with a God, so I have that intuition, know when to break my anonymity, when not to break my anonymity. That was always such a big struggle for me, because in the workplace, I am anonymous. I work around a lot of people that would just love to have that edge over me, and I'm just a worker among workers. That feels terrific, but you know, once in a while we snag one, but the fly fishing, a lot of times they just go by. I mean, the stream of alcoholism, they are just swimming by, and they are just being pulled by the current by. We are losing so many. Behind every one of those fish, every one of those ones we lose, there's a mother, there's a father, there's a brother, there's a child, there's an aunt, there's a friend. We're about saving lives here. It's a huge responsibility. Now, I have to keep myself fit, as 10 and 11 talks about. I have to keep myself humble. I have to keep myself in God's grace. That takes work, keeping me fit, daily work. But, you know, every once in a while we snag one, and it feels so good. And it's not catch and release, it's catch and pull them in with the net and get them to a meeting and see what happens. And, you know, Clancy talked, I love this, my sponsor Clancy talked about when he was with Bill Wilson, he couldn't shut up. You know, he just talked and talked and talked about himself. He had this wonderful opportunity to meet Bill Wilson. And my sponsor does have feet of clay. He is, and he's not afraid to tell us. And I admire that with somebody who's 51 years sober and still out in the world with a lilt in his eye and a, you know, energy in his step for Alcoholics Anonymous, because I did time drinking in the bars. It felt like doing time when alcohol wasn't working anymore. And I don't do time here. I am in the flow of life. Kelly talked about keeping a clean house, and I'm married now, so things are a little different than when you live alone. But there's certain things I like in order to be able to quiet my heart and my mind and go out into the world in my house. And God doesn't like a cluttered house, so that's my 10th step every morning. I've got to do my 10th step at night, and I've got to do my 11th step in the morning so that I can have a clean house to have some sort of conscious contact. Polly talked about outgrowing fear and the blue ribbon babies. I like that a lot. I don't have any blue ribbons, but a lot of them are out there. The link in the chain, I have to worry about my link and who's hooking up with me. I can give them my experience, strength, and hope, and that's it. And that's powerful stuff, the language of the heart. But she also talked about we like the I wrote that down. We all like the in life. So I definitely will take that one home. And Larry talked about getting to know your defects. And they're going to be riding shotgun with you the rest of your life. So don't feed them, starve them, send them in the back seat, put them in the back of the truck, let them get wind blown, maybe one will fall out, you know. And then you go down the road of life, and there it is, hitchhiking. You feel sorry and pick it back up again, you know. I had a bus driver. I grew up in Iowa, which was my first resentment, but we had a bus driver. I was picked up at the corner at the Cedar River Road and Highway 1 every school day by Laverne Herbst. We had the same bus driver with the yellow school bus every single day of school for years. And my dad would always take a little movie camera picture of us going out the door on the first day of school. And we'd have to hold the big calendar with the day circled. Well, actually, Nancy, my older sister, the Mensa, she got to hold it. And then there's me with the glasses, with the plaid glasses, with the cat eyes, with my hair all funny, and I'm gawky and long-necked, and I'm trying to dart away from the camera. And then there's Sally, my younger sister, with the ponytail. I always had short, permed hair. And Sally had the ponytail and the horse. She got the horse. And then there's my little brother, the carrying on the family name. So I come from this great family, non-alcoholic. But my dad would take this picture. We'd go every year, and we looked at these movies later on. And it's hilarious to see our transitions as we're growing up. But he would always take the camera to the school bus. And there's Laverne Herbst in the front seat with his Oshkosh on, driving the bus. And up by Laverne, you see a stack of comic books. He always had comic books right in the front by him. And, you know, there was always a nice seat right behind him where you could see really well as the bus was going down the road. But me, the alcoholic, before I even had a drink, I had to just check in the back of the bus. I had to just go back there and see if those defects were still there. I still had to go back there and see, you know, Billy Lang and Roger Pitlick and Keith Burge, and were they still back there? Yes, I would go back there to make sure that they could still put gum in my hair. They could still steal my food and tell me there's no Santa Claus. And every year I would think it's going to be different. I'll go back there and one of them will be nice to me. But every year I go in the back and sit with my defects of character. And, you know, the school bus does have that emergency thing, so maybe every once in a while one would fall out, but Laverne would pick it up. But sitting up by Laverne in the front, you had heat, you had juice, you had comic books, you had a good view, you had a little radio. And that's my God driving the bus. I got to let my God drive the bus. I'm going to sit up front with my God where I'm taken care of, having a good time. Even in the tough spots of life, after having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, I have joy. There's something in me called joy that I hadn't had before. I had a spiritual awakening when I drank alcohol. I grew up really fast with the alcohol in my life. I made a lot of broken hearts in my family, being the only alcoholic, not knowing what happened to Sharon. What's wrong with daughter number two? Cutting her wrists, dropping out of school, giving up her art talent. Alcohol asked for my dignity, I paid. Alcohol asked for my musical ability, I paid. Alcohol became king of my life, and my family broke their hearts. They had no idea what was wrong with me. I got sober on August 20th, 1975, after drinking pretty regularly from 14 to I just had turned 26. And I was an old, tired soul when I got here. An ember of life, that was what was left. And all it would have taken was one more little event where I would put myself in harm's way to extinguish that ember. But instead, Gary talked about it last night, being in the car, you know, with the newcomer locks. In a God-given day of grace, I had nothing to do with it other than I just followed the next breadcrumb that was laid out for me that morning. I called somebody I knew who could help me because I had nowhere to go. My jaw had been broken in three places. I was a victim of violent crime. I had been in the hospital for 2 weeks. I am drinking alcohol through the wires on the mouth where the tooth had been kicked out. Cheap red wine, staying with this guy, having to go to court, and I was tired. The morning he tapped me on the shoulder and said, "You have to leave. You're depressing me." I thought, I had nowhere to go. And I called a phone number, which was sitting there. She wasn't sober that day, but she was an in-and-out member of Alcoholics Anonymous. She knew what had happened to me. She knew my drinking. She said, "I know you need to call this woman, Suzanne." I called a stranger and asked for help. I don't do that. Suzanne sent her newcomers over to get me with their yellow Volkswagen and no windows that rolled down in the back and no doors. So I was back there going to, I don't know where, a church, maybe where they were going to give me some sanctity for a while. A church where maybe they were going to let me stay and give me some clothes, give me, you know, something liquid I could eat. 3 months I was wired shut. I couldn't talk. I had to learn to listen in Alcoholics Anonymous. It was a blessing in disguise. And that's how I got here, a moment of grace that Polly talked about, that grace. It was very much an unearned gift that day. And that was my day, August 20th, 1975, and I will never forget that day. because it had nothing to do with me. And if God can remove the obsession for alcohol and get me to Alcoholics Anonymous, the God that I found in Alcoholics Anonymous is powerful enough to give me everything I need in life. God has already handled it. God has already handled it. Much like Bill, I have stepped from bridge to shore here. The conscious contact I have with my higher power has come through the steps. The consciousness has come through waking up to life, making a decision to believe in a God that loves me, a higher power. Beacon's Moving Van was my first God because it made sense. Because I had a sponsor louder than my head. I've always had a sponsor louder than my head. Thank goodness I do. Because much of the time, sometimes my head will wake me up, much like a vulture, it's fed, ready to go. You know, we've been thinking about you. We've been talking about you. Get up, you know. So I'm glad I have a place to go and quiet myself. I'm glad I have a sponsor louder than my head. And Janet said to me the night that I got Beacon's Moving Van as my first higher power, because I am a fallen away Catholic. God and I had a big fight with a priest in a church in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. I shook my fist and said, goodbye, God. You know, other than being a crisis Christian at certain times when, you know, you're hitchhiking and they're weird and they have shotguns and things like that, you know, God, if you get me out of this one, you know, I'm definitely a crisis Christian in situations. But Janet walked by me. I was standing by my Boy Meets Girl on AA campus, and we were talking to newcomers, and they were talking about tube tops. Janet used to wear tube tops, you know, and short shorts and spring-a-later shoes, and her tube top would be like orange, and her little shorts would be like satin green, and her nails would be like pink. And I could always find her in the room. That was a good thing, because she glowed. And she walked by me, she put her hands on her hips and stood there and said, listened to us talking to the newcomers. And she said, you know what, Sharon, you better get your own higher power, you're going to get drunk. I was like, Janet, come on, give me some clout, there's new people here, you know. And she said, well, I said, and I saw Beacon's van across the street, parked out from our Thursday night meeting. I said, that's my new higher power, Janet, look at Beacon's Moving Van. I wanted to make her mad. And she just listened to my analogy about how God got me where I needed to go, like a big moving van and beacon of light, even spelled differently, and wrapped me in a blanket. And, you know, I got a little knob off the bureau and we're scratched. And, you know, the furniture is a little worn, but we got to AA. And all the newcomers are, oh, yeah, I like that, you know. And Janet looks at me and she's got her hands on her hips. She said, good, as long as it's not you. And click plopped away. And I just thought, oh, I'll pray to Beacons the rest of my life, you know. And it started me on a road. And the beautiful thing about that is I've shared it many times. So probably this week I'll get a call from somebody going, I just saw Beacons van. How are you? I'm thinking about you. You know, we connect in the oddest ways, you know. Oh, that's right. That's right. You were a crack whore. Let me have this girl call that girl, you know. I mean, that's the way it is. We connect, you know, we connect. Our stories connect us. Frank talked about what is the comfort of a, how great is the comfort of a quiet head and a quiet heart. And I've known Frank since the beginning. And he was very kind to my son, who I was a single parent for most of his upbringing. And he was very kind to my son, and you know, when little boys play war games, they want to meet a real warrior. And Frank wrote in some letters from Desert Storm, just to him. Gary said, I did not drink well. Well, you could look at him and know he didn't drink well. Love that. Love that. Love that. And he said, what is an incident in the world we call, you know, we call our stories, you know. We call our personal adventures. Just sit down with somebody who's not an alcoholic and tell them some of your personal adventures with excitement, and they just look at you like, oh my God, I've done that over picking out peaches at a market, because you got to take your time picking out peaches. So people are over there picking out peaches, and how are you? And then you tell them, well, you know, my head's talking to me, and you see them again in the market 2 weeks later, they go, oh God, that's that lady, and they're gone, you know? My first job in AA was waiting tables. I was a bartender in New Orleans. Come on, I'm waiting tables, serving food. This is lame, but I have a bad attitude. And even the Culver City Clubhouse people, after their meeting on Friday night, did not want to sit in my station because I brought them down. And it took the Al-Anons to teach me how to fake it. Because I'm supposed to be honest in all my affairs. And, put that on your resume, which I did, actually. Didn't get me a job, but I did put all of the dancing I'd done in New Orleans, all the seedy bars I worked at. Fritzels, the lamplighter, Funky Butts, that was a good one. If I don't do steps 10 and 11, I start to build a case. I am an isolator. I am a rebel. I have a backpack. In my backpack is a book called Be Here Now. That's what I came here with. I don't need you. I'm self-sufficient. God, forget you, God. I've been hurt way too much, and now I'm a real victim. I am registered as one of the early victim of violent crimes in the state of California. Jacobian Myers even went to my bat for me to get me some, like, $700 or something. And food stamps, and I couldn't eat, I'm like, they gave me a food stamp. It was very interesting. But I build a case, and it's slow, because the bricks have come down between me and God and me and you. I have stepped from bridge to shore, as Bill has done. I have found, and I seek the treasure. I am a seeker. If I am not growing, I'm building a case. If I am not growing, I'm packing my backpack. If I am not telling the truth, if I am not looking at it, if I am not taking an inventory of where I can get into self-pity and selfishness, worry, anxiety, anger, honesty, if I am not looking at that and sharing it when it becomes big, with somebody, because my second sponsor, Ginny, taught me to look at my first thoughts of the day. Look at your first thoughts of the day, whatever they are. That's where you need to go. And when I am right, that is what I need. That's what I need to do. I take the responsibility very serious in Alcoholics Anonymous, what we do here, because it's for fun and for free. And I don't want to build a case and go out the door today. Today I am with you. Today I am with my people. Today I am with the mothership that I looked for my whole life. I met you in AA, and I had no idea that experience, strength, and hope in the language of the heart was going to snag me out of the stream of alcoholism, but it did. I think it's better to eat crow when it's warm. If you have to humble yourself to make some amends from doing a spot check inventory, because if I'm disturbed, something in me, that spiritual axiom. And one of the things that I've learned is that everybody's in different cliques of that 180-degree turn. Everybody's in different cliques of it in the room. Some people go a couple of clicks, and they're happy. And that's what they want to do. Some people go all the way around and keep going. That's kind of where I am. I feel like I'm God's kid today. Chuck used to say, you don't see till you see, and you don't hear till you hear. And there's still so much I want to see and so much I want to hear. And by keeping myself open, by keeping the room clean, by keeping the channel open, I have that intuitive thought. I have that sixth sense it talks about, my awake consciousness for the world. But no matter how good I am in the morning before I leave, just a thought. I have dog and cats. I rescue animals because I had a lot. I had, a skunk, a snake, cats, dogs, things that got kind of in the way of my alcoholism. And some of them bit the dust, and it still breaks my heart. So I am a rescue girl. I find homes if I have to. My 30th birthday was on Katrina that weekend. I had my big party, and a lot of people gave donations to Katrina for the animals because they knew my story. But I have this great dog. She's 12 now, but she's great. And, you know, Charlotte Clancy's wife says, you know what dog spelled backward is, don't you? It's like, yeah. And she said, just go, you know, leave your dog at the front door. You just came home. You just petted her. You had a great time. Walk out to the mailbox. Get the mail. Come back in 1 minute later, and that dog is so happy to see you. It's like you never can't, it's like, oh my God, it's not like you were gone a minute. It's like you're here, you're back. I'm so happy. I mean, and that is my God with me. My God is so happy I'm back. God will always show me the way back. If I leave just for a little bit, he's so happy to have me back. There is no guilt or shame or remorse, or it's just pure love. And I never thought, from the tip of my head to the tip of my toes, I could feel anything so great. And once that hit me in my life, I became a real seeker. And so much in me, all I can do is just keep giving it away. Whether you want it or not, you're going to get it. But I'll get out in my car. I'll have a great morning, my meditation with my dog and my cats. And I used to have a cat that would just sit in my lap and touch my face and look up at me when I'd meditate. And she was 18 when she left. And the seat was empty, and now I have another cat that has been around but knows there's a spot on my lap. Because we sit in the morning before they get fed. So I have accountability in the morning, which is great. Because they're already on the couch when I come downstairs going, come on, we're hungry. Come sit, you know. Do your thing. We're patient here. But no matter how good I am in the morning, I can be 1 mile from my house, and that little old lady can cut me off. And I'm thinking, what's she doing out here on this time? She's between 7 a.m. and 10 a.m., she should wait for us workers to be out on the road. And what's she doing driving a Valiant? Isn't that a classic car now? And I wonder who does her hair. It's blue. She cut me off. I don't like her. I think I'm going to follow her down the freeway. Just to see what else she's up to, you know? So I get close to her on the freeway. It's a summer day. She's got her windows down. She's listening to something called K-Joy. It's elevator music. It's like, oh my God. You know, so I crank up my rock and roll and get right next to her. I swear to God, she's not even giving me a nod. But, okay, I'm done with you now. You're in my dust, and I am going to punish everybody between me and my off-ramp now. I have forgotten everything that I just sat with God, tried to have intuitive thought, take it into the world, be useful. Page 77, fit myself to be of maximum service to God and the people about me. Well, the people about me is the little blue-haired lady. We don't have a lock on spirituality here, you know. We just don't. There's a whole bunch of people in the world that have a lot of languages of the heart that work for them, my mother being one. She's an amazingly strong, beautiful faith, woman of faith, no matter what. She always believed that would be okay. And she loves you and sleeps at night because of you. Thank you. But I am sweating and hot and just gripping the wheel, and I'm at my off-ramp, and I'm ready to go home and take a shower. I'm just like, I'm not even halfway to work yet, you know, and I'm exhausted from punishing the world. And I get to my off-ramp, and guess who's ahead of me on the off-ramp? Every little blue hair in place, not a bead of sweat on her, still sweetly smiling, listening to K-Joy. And I thought, I left her in my dust. I punished everybody between me and the off-ramp. How did she get ahead of me? And she looks still so calm and happy. And I had to laugh, thank God, for the humor and the way we are. Because that's me. I was out in the bramble bushes and getting hung up in the you know, and I've got a sponsor in the middle of the road. I've got a God that says, you know, honey, come here. This is paved. We know the path. We'll sit here on the rock and wait for you because we know you got to do this thing to learn whatever lessons it is you got to learn. But, you know, we'll take care of your cuts. We'll feed you. We'll move on down the road. You stayed in the rooms. Don't leave when life gets tough. I've had a lot of tough things in my life, and I've been, the wagons have circled, and God has been there even in the moments of my deepest pain. There's been joy. The joy of gratitude, the joy of Alcoholics Anonymous, the joy to know that I am with my people and that I have found the common solution and that I can be useful. Gandhi was one of my early heroes when I was a little girl. Did a whole big thing on him. I wanted to be somebody who worked for the United Nations. I had big aspirations for myself, and I picked up a drink, and I stopped being useful. And Alcoholics Anonymous has given me my soul back, has given me a heart that has broken open. A broken heart heals bigger. This is corny, but angels with one wing don't fly alone. I know. So every once in a while, these corny things come up in my head. It's my sixth sense, I guess. But I, if I build a case, I'm out of here. If I don't say I'm sorry when it's right in front of me. My husband and I got married 3 years ago in Las Vegas in March. That was a wonderful experience. But we decided to elope. We decided to keep it quiet. We decided to not tell anyone. My son walked me down the aisle. I am on the phone with some of my oldest babies saying, you got to come, you got to come. We got married with his brother and his brother's childhood sweetheart, so we had a double ceremony. We had all decided how to do it, and I am now taking the reins, not talking to anybody, being selfish and self-centered, and I am stepping on the toes of these people that it's going to be an amazing, special experience for us, and I'm blowing it. And so I had to pick up the phone and eat crow. I had to eat crow with my husband. I had to say I'm sorry. It was really hard to chew. But it was still a little warm, so we got it down. We were able to move on and have a great time. That was fairly recent. I made amends with my family, and thank God I had that intuitive thought one day. My dad and I broke my dad's heart. He's Czech. I'm very proud of being Czech, half Czech. He's a real consistent, make-your-own-way man, very ethical, a lot of integrity, a lot of love for his family. And I broke my father's heart. I played the accordion because my dad was Czech. Still not very cool. Wasn't cool then, but I risked it because I wanted my dad's love. And I got my second sponsor, Ginny, who had me make those amends to my dad. And the consciousness of her to know that about my life when she didn't really know my story, but knew that she probably owes her dad some money. So let's just tell her to call him and make those amends. The consciousness of that sponsorship I had with Jenny G, big meeting in the sky, Chuck Nesbitt, big meeting in the sky, man, that was so kind to me, Clint, Vince, so many people, so many of those strong, wonderful people that were there for me when I got sober, meeting in the sky. Jenny had the consciousness because of her program to have me make financial amends to my dad and to have me put a note with the check into my father because my dad accepted my payment terms, and I set about sending that check and the note about my life for almost 4 years. And many of you know the story. At the end of that 4 years, I had about 6 years, and he didn't want my money anymore and called me and said, Merry Christmas, Sharon, I don't want your money anymore, but don't stop sending me your notes. My dad and I got to have an aware, an alert, a current, guilt-free relationship because of the consciousness of a woman who sponsored me, who had been through the steps, who knew how to pass it on in a powerful way. And I went home once. Good daughters go home. Good daughters go home, and we weed the garden, and we do the dishes, and we go to the hardware store with my dad, and we sit down and watch the news together and talk about the weather. And I send my son home to know his grandparents every summer, so they get to know him. And I am in my amends to my father. I was stuck at O'Hare Airport in the morning. I had done my 11th step work. I had had my spiritual awakening at about 7 years of sobriety, so it was shortly after that. It was an unexpected spiritual awakening I had while taking my 7-year cake. From the tip of my head to the tip of my toes, I was filled with love. And they picked me up at the airport, and it's my sister's wedding weekend. Nurse Sally, little ponytail, it's her wedding weekend. And I'm tired. I hadn't slept. And we're all in the van together. The Mensa older sister, Nurse Sally, my mother, my brother, my dad is driving, the new brother-in-law-to-be, we're all in the van and me. And I look up at the front seat, and Nancy and my dad are talking about money and finance and investments. I'm thinking, she always gets the front seat. I get car sick back here. How come she always gets the front seat? And then, I know about money. I've been paying you back, Dad. Come on. Ask me. But he doesn't. And then Nurse Sally has my mother's attention talking about the dress and the gifts. And I'm thinking, I know fashion. I was in home ec. I know how to not over-accessorize. I can figure this out. Why didn't you ask me about the wedding dress and what to do, and how come you're leaving me out? And then I look over at my brother. He's talking to his new brother-in-law about fishing. I know how to bait a hook. I can clean a fish. I can fry it up right there in the pan by the river. And nobody's asking me. And before I know it, I'm having cathartic sobbing, sitting in the middle seat of the second seat of the van, leaned over going, cathartic sobbing happening. And we are on the Cedar River Road now. We're on the country road going towards the house. And my father hears this noise, and he stops the van on this road and turns around and looks at me, and he says, "Are you all right?" Oh. This is my platform I've been waiting for my whole life. They're all here. It won't take that many bullets. But thank God I had some intuitive thought that day, because it would have destroyed everything that Alcoholics Anonymous represented through me to these people. Because I heard a voice, that sixth sense, said, "Get out of the van." And I said, I just need some water. So they gave me some water. I stood outside of the van. And they went back to their conversations like I was not having this huge thing happening to me. It's like, God, just not deep. And I stood there, and me and the God, we had a bonding moment with the cornfield. You know, I hated being from Iowa. It was corn and pigs. When I drank in New York City, I was from Wisconsin because I had cheese and milk and dairy. It felt a little more sophisticated, even though I sound like I'm from the Midwest. I was from Wisconsin, not the pigs and corn state, because I felt like a pig and corn. So I'm looking at this cornfield thinking, that's really corny. But look at it. It's really kind of pretty. And there's a haze above a cornfield if you ever see it. You can really watch it grow in the summer. You can. Look away, it's growing. Look away, it's growing. It's growing. And those top is golden. It's got that golden hue of life happening. And as you look out over with the sun through it, there's life in there, things that are floating in there. And then as I turned away, I thought, gee, that's pretty, God. Out of the corner of my eye, I caught a glimpse of how my God is with me, of how much love there is. God has already handled it. He's already handled it, whatever it is. I just have to fit myself. I have to do 10 and 11. I have to do the third step prayer. I have to do St. Francis prayer. I have to fit myself so that I can go the path that I need to go to have it be revealed. We don't even have to work at it. It is revealed. What an honor it is to be on the path and have life reveal to you what you need to know. I looked away and I saw before I turned that it's all laid out in rows, that it's been thought of, that it's been handled, that the soil was tilled and made ready, that the seeds went down in it, that the rain came and the sun shone, and those little seeds didn't know where they were growing. They didn't know they were going to grow into this amazing field of corn. One stalk with all the other stalks planned out, thought out, taken care of. And I got it. I got it a little bit more that day. And I'm really from Wisconsin now. My mother moved up there. that's cool. But many of you know my dad was killed 10 years ago, and thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank God for that intuitive thought that day. Thank God that I know how to keep my mouth shut in my life now. My actions speak for me much of the time. I've been taught to suit up and show up in my home group. I've been taught to suit up and show up in life. I've been taught that I am not the most important person in the room, that I am a link in the chain, and my job is to keep my link strong so that other people can link on up and pass it on. There's nothing more powerful than a fourth and fifth step. And watching the face soften, watching the person emerge. What a gift we have. We just have to fit ourselves. It takes a lot of work for us alcoholics, if you're like me, to stay fit, to have the proper attitude it talks about. To be in the sunlight of the Spirit, to become God conscious. Thoughts that must go with us constantly. Proper use of the will. Oh, so stubborn. I didn't know how to sit back and let others lead. I was my own drummer. I liked it that way. It takes a lot for me to fall in love, and I've fallen deeply in love with my husband. Deeply in love. We have some challenges now in life, and he's amazing me with his strength and his commitment to Alcoholics Anonymous. I get to sit back and watch the miracle in his life. And I like what Tom I says about miracle. It's not some big old thing. It's just when preparation meets coincidence and God does the introduction. I really like that. I prepare myself, I go out in the world, I find something will happen, I have a coincidence, I know God's in it. I know God's in it. And, so Casey sends his best, which is me. So, staying humble and staying teachable, life will keep you there. You don't have to go make it yourself, life will do it. You know, so if you're just living life and showing up at meetings and sponsoring people and going to work and picking up the phone and being accountable and saying your prayers and looking at your part, God will give you everything you need to grow. I'm a seeker. I am in the middle of the road with you most of the time. I have a lot of bricks between me and that bottle of Jose Cuervo. A lot of things to knock some sense into me before I get there. A lot of people that I feel responsible to and that I love and that love me. My son looked at me one day when he was little. I was a single mom raising a boy, and he looked at me one day and he said, "You're a mean mom." Oof. So I had to do a little inventory on that. What does he mean? I'm a mean mom. I wasn't paying any attention to him. You know, the phone's ringing, the girls are at the door, the coffee pot's on. Come on, get in the car, get your coloring book, get your Game Boy, we're going to a meeting. And I had to talk to my sponsor about that. My sponsor was a man named Clancy because Jenny smoked pot after 21 years. And she came back and got another 11 years in before she passed away 2 years ago, sober. And I had to tell Clancy that my son thinks I'm a mean mom, and he said, "Well, what are you doing?" And so we had to make Lego time together. I'm a Lego queen now. A lot of years of Lego. And that little boy grew up with love and confidence because I heard him. I heard him. I was conscious enough that day to not just pass it off as a little kid saying, "Oh, something stupid." A lot of times, if I'm just aware, I learn from him. I remember being at Toys R Us at Christmas. He's still kind of small. So we're still going to Toys R Us and looking for, you got to find just that right Ninja Turtle. You know, it's like, no, we got all of these other 18, but we got to get that one. Maybe they have it today. So somebody took my parking spot at Christmas time. You know, that's kind of crazy when they take, you're right there ready to go in with your blinker on and somebody comes and whips in. My mom, my son looked at me and said, "Mom, don't." But I couldn't let it go. I'm dragging him into Toys R Us. I said, "I see those people, they're all dressed in white, they have things on their heads, I can find them. It's a big store, but I can find them." And Wesley's going, "Oh, God." So I spot them and he just leaves me. He just leaves me. And I'm going up to him and I'm explaining to them about the rules of parking lots. Especially at Christmas time, what a turn signal means, and I was there first. And they're kind of looking at me like with these wide eyes, kind of expressionless. And I realize when they talk to each other about what's happening, they don't speak a word of English. My son is over there by the Ninja Turtles rolling on the floor laughing so hard. Little humiliation. Got humbled by that. At 10 years when I got that divorce, that was a humbling experience. I had to do another inventory with my sponsor. There's spot check inventories. There's, annual inventories. I've taken a big inventory with every one of my sponsors as to where I am in my life. When I went through that divorce, he picked the newcomer in the room instead of me. It was really painful. Nobody got custody of the meetings. We were all there. They were pregnant and married in that order. And I sat by the heater with my quilt wrapped around me at 3 a.m. in such pain writing. And I went in the car, it was Clancy speaking somewhere with a flashlight and read my inventory. And you don't get in a wreck, I don't know what it is about him, he drives terrible, but you make it, you know? And I got to set out on walking through it with dignity and grace, because he's louder than my head. And I didn't want dignity and grace, but he told me to be an example for the newcomers. So I was glad that I had shared that with my sponsor. I was glad that he kept me accountable. I was glad that he said, "You have to pray for her." You know, it says in the book, you don't pray for yourself unless it has something to do with helping somebody else. Well, I kind of took that literally. And I was praying for me to basically just get over on her, one way or the other. So that was praying for her. But my sponsor made me show up with dignity and grace. I walked through it because I'm an example to others. And I started to like her because she was nice to my son. I had the awareness. I had the consciousness. We were all in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, people say, "How do they get away with that in the room?" Well, the room is full of alcoholics, first of all. Why does it surprise you? Or like somebody said, oh, my God, someone over there has been drinking. I can smell it. Well, let's go find them. That's a newcomer. You know, it's... I said, if you knew how they could get away with it, you'd be doing it. So don't be glad you don't know how they're getting away with it. And just go about your life. Pray for them if you have to. So I started to like her. And when he left her for somebody else after their baby was born, she said she knew she could walk through it with dignity and grace because she had watched me. So it's also my job to not judge and to forgive. Forgiveness is such a huge part of where I am right now in my life. It soothes my soul. It allows me to have comfort in the storm. It is the eye of the hurricane. And I'm able to be useful even when I hurt. That's the joy, is that my God loves me so much. And somewhere in there, that great fact, I know he's handled it. I just have to suit up and show up. Put my hand out, have a proper attitude, fit myself. I have a story to tell you about my dad. Because I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and my father came out and walked me down the aisle the first wedding, bought the big book, read it, thought it was amazing and wonderful what you were doing with his daughter, and had a lot of respect for you. And I would be home in Iowa, and they'd look at me after dinner and go, are you going to a meeting? They always knew I was happier when I got back from a meeting. That we didn't have any alcoholics either. I didn't know an alcoholic, really. We had town drunks. Town drunks that I loved, because he would come borrow my father's bottle from a liquor cabinet, and I would steal two bottles if my dad wasn't home, keep one, and tell my dad that the town drunk, John, borrowed two bottles. And I got a whole bottle when John came to borrow one from Frank, and Frank wasn't home. So I liked those town drunks. And John had come to my father one evening, because my dad was the kind of man you could drive up to the house, sit and have a chat with him, and he'd kind of just help you with your problems. He was that kind of man. He had a big heart. And he was complaining about his wife, Lizzie. I know these people. And my dad said, you know what, it's not her fault. I'm tired of you whining about this. You need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. You're an alcoholic. Let me get that big book that I got when I was out to see my daughter and give it to you. I didn't know about this until my dad was gone. Nobody told me this story until my dad was gone. And being in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous one evening when I didn't want to be there, and it was raining and it was hard to get to, and I'm tired and it's Thursday night and it's Thousand Oaks and I don't carpool with anyone because I'm mad at everybody and I want to be alone. I listen to my heavy metal really loud. Look for that little blue-haired lady, you know, in that mood. And I get to the meeting, and I just in time to walk up to the podium and share, and there's a girl that stops afterwards and says, I need to talk to you. I was like, oh, boy, what'd I say, you know? She said, I'm from Lisbon, Iowa, originally. I live out here now. And I happened to talk about that experience that my father gave the big book to, that I had never talked about before. My dad had been dead a couple years when I found out. Maybe it was within that year I talked about it. Just that night, for the first time. And she said, that man that your father gave the big book to is my uncle, and he's still sober. And I went home for a family reunion a couple years ago, and my uncle 12-stepped me, and now I have 2 years. And I got to see, I got to feel, I got to understand, just for a moment, how powerful this thing is, how important it is. I got to see the ripple hit the shore. And that's what we do here. We just keep making ripples. We don't see hit the shore. I'm not above everybody, so I'm like looking down, seeing all the ripples hit the shore. Every once in a while in the trenches, you get to peek up and go, ah, there's a ripple hitting the shore, because I have that conscious contact with my God. I have kept myself cleaned out. I've allowed the sunlight of the Spirit into my heart. And that amazes me. I like to remember in the morning to be gracious. I am quiet. I need my first morning meditations were walking because I couldn't stay still. I had to walk, and my sponsor said, okay, say the Lord's Prayer three times in a row without thinking about yourself. Have you ever tried that? It's like, maybe I got through one. But always right at the beginning of two, I thought, oh, good, I got through one. I didn't think, start over. And then it became in a bathtub with a teacup. I was told to sit until the teacup and the water get cold. I was doing something. I was taking a bath and drinking my tea. And it's just devolved into, I look forward to it. I even stopped drinking coffee in the morning because I don't want to have it to go say good morning to my God. I want to say good morning to my God without it. That just happened. So I have my good morning with God with my animals. And on the weekends, my husband and I do it together when we can. We have the quiet time and the readings and the looks and the love and the grace. And he and I both know how lucky we are to be here. We have those kind of stories, seconds and inches. I have this cat, though. It's a rescue cat, and it's much like me sometimes with God. I'm like sitting there and I'm trying to just empty myself out and know that, okay, I'm in a glass bottom boat here and we're going out into the lake and it's a still lake and that's cool. And you know, underneath the surface are all my character defects, but I'm looking at them, just kind of taking inventory in my head going, yeah, 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 yeah. Figuring out which ones are important, which ones aren't, you know, taking a few notes, but I'm in the glass bottom boat going out there. And then my cat, the one that can't wait very long, I have a couple of them, starts to whine because I'm not going to get fed. Oh, my God, you got me off the street. I haven't missed a meal in 12 years, but I know today you're not going to feed me. Now, if you come to my house, you'll never meet this cat because he's a scaredy cat, but he is like 14 pounds of feed me, feed me, feed me. And one day I thought, that's me, that's me. God's already handled it. God's given me food. I've never starved to death. I've always had a place to sleep. But that's me in the morning going, feed me, feed me, feed me. Whine, 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 rubbing on God's leg. And God's just looking at me going, honey, you always get fed. I always take care of you. I love you. You know, and that's what I tell poor Taz. Just hang in there. You know, we're going to get it. Just be patient. Take a breath. Close your mouth. I love what it says in the 11th step about, you know, when we have right motives and proper attitude, we're not burning up energy foolishly. I hate wasting time. I am the biggest burning up energy foolishly with my head sometimes. I love Dr. Paul because he was right there with you. He was right there with you. When you talked to him on the phone or you were in his presence, he was there with you. And that is something that I try to aspire to, and it is hard because, as was said last night, we're always formulating what we're going to say next. I think Larry said it. We're like not listening, you know. What was your name for the third time? You know, I hate that when I am like so into myself. I am not in the room. I am not grounded. I am not with my people. I am not reveling in the lifeboats, because we just got saved from the Titanic. We are supposed to be framed in black in our parents' or child's house. I love my mom, but I don't know what happened. She died in a seizure. We loved our daughter, but she got killed in Pensacola, Florida by somebody who shot her when she was hitchhiking. That's my story. And we sit in the lifeboats together. And we revel in the grace that we get to be in the rooms. And we get to go out and fly fish and try to save one more life. Because behind that life, there's 10 people. If you're in your first year, those 10 people that have been praying for you and loving you and wishing for you and doing everything they can or can't do for you so that you get into a solution for your disease, they are finally sleeping at night. They are finally digesting their food. They know now they can maybe go to a movie and not get a phone call that you're in jail. It is not about you. It is not about me. I like what Blake says. He said, when you throw me on the pyre of life, he spent a lot of time in India. And he sat there in the Ganges and watched all the bodies burning. They throw them on the pyre of life and set them afire and put them down at night. Sometimes when they have this ceremony, there's all these flames of people's bodies being cremated. He saw all of that and he wrote, when you throw me on the pyre of life, may I be all used up. Use me up. Use me, God. Let me see what you want me to do. Let me sit through this tough time in my husband's and my life. Let me support it. Let me love him. Let me have the sweetness of every single day. I love you. I love my life. I guess all you really have to do to lead a spiritual life is to try to brighten the corner where you live. It's about that simple. And you have taught me how to burn bright. And I love you, and I thank you for that. Thank you.